organizations create community that is centered around whatever we do with these radio stations, whether we talk into microphones to tell stories or whether we create sound art. That's what radio is for, as far as I'm concerned.
And I also think that, you know, we kind of get into this mode of, you know, expecting that a medium is supposed to radically transform our consciousness and our society, you know, the way that the early avant-garde thought it would. And instead it's like, why don't you think about what this medium could amplify or enhance, or how it could tweak something that's already potentially present. So, I feel like in the 90s, we were really scrabbling for access. It was really hard to get access. And in the United States, there was a huge pirate radio boom because it was very difficult to have a low power station legally.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Radio made with radio.
Listening to the test site of Acoustic Commons, available at wavefarm.org/listen or on any wgxc.org webpage if you click on the listen button. The test site of Acoustic Commons is a microphone in the Wavefarm woods that lets you overhear the sounds of nature, the live weather on the radio at wavefarm.org/listen, or click on any WGXC.org webpage. Click on the listen button to hear the sounds in the woods at Wave Farm through the test site of Acoustic Commons. Tune in to all sorts of live radio shows every Sunday on WGXC 90.7 FM, beginning at 8 a.m., where the Reverend Kim Singletary is live with There's a Bright Side Somewhere from Columbia County, every Sunday at 8 a.m. Then at 9 a.m., Janessa Hope McKay brings you a slap of reality live from the WGXC studio in Hudson in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. She's playing her top music pick and talking about her hot topics of the week until 11 a.m. At 1 p.m., every Sunday, DJ Neva Wartell is live with Music for the Masses from Catskill, with sounds from around the world. At 4 p.m. every Sunday, Carlene Murphy and Azuka Legba are live with the Lile Latan version of the WGXC Afternoon Show until 6 p.m. And every Sunday night, Tony Fallon is live with the Irish Show at 8 p.m. on the radio from Acre on 90.7 WGXC.
Are you tired of your flying saucer always breaking down on your way to Mars?
Wish you could get more bang for your whoopee at the gas pump?
Well, here at Flying Saucer Mart, we have the perfect flying saucer for you.
It goes as fast as light. It comes in a variety of colors and only costs you 75 whoopee.
Come down to 375 Bionic Ave in Pluto City and fly home with a new used flying saucer today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Dan and Mary Udell of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Signal Hill, Newfoundland, Thursday morning, December the 12th, 1901.
Sono lieto di poter rievocare in poche parole le esperienze delle prime trasmissioni radiotelegrafiche a grandi distanze da me felicemente eseguite attraverso l'Oceano Atlantico il 12 dicembre 1901. Queste esperienze provarono conclusivamente che la trasmissione e la ricezione delle onde elettriche non erano affatto limitate, come a quel tempo credevano tutti gli scienziati alle brevi distanze, bensì potevano essere utilizzate per le comunicazioni fra il vecchio e il nuovo mondo.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Paul Kirby is reporting for the Daily Freeman. In a statement Thursday, December 29th, State Senator Michelle Henchy said she will vote against Governor Kathy Hochul's nomination of Judge Hector LaSalle to serve as the next Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals. In a statement Thursday and tweets posted on December 22nd, the Socrates Democrat said, and I quote, "While I express my support for the many other accomplished and experienced chief judge candidates, I had also made it clear that I cannot support a nominee who has delivered anti-choice, anti-union rulings. If the Honorable LaSalle's nomination comes to the floor, I will vote no," end quote. Henchy said LaSalle's nomination should be opposed, and I quote, "especially at a time when our rights are being attacked by a highly conservative U.S. Supreme Court. It's of the utmost importance that, here in our state, we appoint judges who deeply believe in and defend our New York values," end quote. Hochul nominated LaSalle on December 22nd to head the Court of Appeals. If approved, LaSalle would be the first Latino to head that court and serve as head administrator for the statewide court system. LaSalle is a Long Island native and former prosecutor. He is currently the presiding justice of the state's second appellate division, which handles appeals from the state courts in Staten Island, Brooklyn, Queens, and Long Island. His nomination is supported by a number of Democrats, including Attorney General Letitia James and Kingston Mayor Steve Noble. However, the nomination has drawn criticism from others, particularly progressive lawmakers and advocates who cite his history of controversial opinions and past work as a prosecutor. The Senate has 30 days from December 22nd to vote on the nominee. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Andrea Mickle is reporting for Porcupine Soup. Town of Cairo residents and officials received unpleasant news this week when they determined the town's 2023 tax levy increase is 7.5%, nearly 15 times higher than the 0.513% that town supervisor Jason Watts projected when the town board adopted the budget on November 7th. Because 7.5% far exceeds the state tax cap, the board has held a short emergency meeting on the afternoon of December 29th and adopted a local law to override the cap. However, questions remain as to whether the board acted too late and exactly how the mistake was made in the first place. Town Attorney Tal Raplia explained during the emergency meeting, and I quote, "We realized just last night, notwithstanding the fact that we thought the tax levy was going to go up by 0.5%, that when tax bills came out, it is actually 7.5%, end quote. He added, and I quote, "We don't know how this happened. The only thing we can think of is there was some type of typographical or accounting error in the document that the town presented on the night of the public hearing," end quote. The board ultimately voted unanimously to override the tax cap, with Watts board members Mary Jo Quartz and Deborah Bogans present. Members Tim Powers and Michael Flannery were absent. In an email, Powers said that while he had voted to adopt the 2023 budget in November, he did so because Watts told the board the tax levy increase was going to be less than 8%. What's more, he said, and I quote, "The emergency meeting was supposed to be at 7 p.m. on Thursday, but after I indicated that I was against overriding the tax cap and wanted to rescind the entire budget, they moved the meeting to 1 p.m. They knew I couldn't be there due to work," end quote. The announcement of the emergency meeting, called Thursday morning, was posted on the door to Town Hall. No notices were placed on the town's website or Facebook page, and, to date, there is no 2023 budget information available at townofcairo.com. Under state law, local governments must keep the annual tax levy increase at or below the cap or adopt a local law to override the cap. In October, the Cairo Town Board conducted the required public hearing in anticipation of adopting a local law, but never followed through. Residents and local attorney Monica Kenny Keff told Raplia from the audience, "The state does not allow local governments to retroactively override the tax cap." She said, and I quote, "This has to be in place and passed before the vote on the budget," end quote. Read the full story at porcupinesoup.com. Jamal Cutler is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Hudson Common Council Wednesday, December 28th, adopted a new local law, taking the first step toward the creation of a sidewalk improvement district that would be subsidized by a fee assessed to residents. At the special meeting held to discuss the city's deteriorating sidewalks Wednesday, the council immediately went behind closed doors for 25 minutes to discuss with legal counsel the proposed local law that would create a sidewalk improvement district. Elected officials were working under a January 1st deadline to act on the resolution or face an undetermined penalty for noncompliance from the state. Under the measure, the annual maintenance fee for undeveloped lots and silver lots is zero. For low foot traffic lots, it is $100, and for all others, it is $200. The frontage fee will be $30, and the square footage fee is 15 cents per square foot. The fees will be reviewed annually by the council. Fees will be determined by the property classification. Common Council President Thomas DiPietro said he was pleased with the meeting's outcome. He said, and I quote, After a bumpy start with the council, we cleared up all the misinformation and arrived at unanimous support for moving this forward, end quote. Editor's note, DiPietro was a volunteer WGXE on-air host, and you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website at WGXE.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day, a nice weekend, and a happy new year.
The Environmental Protection Agency is investing $14.3 million in green jobs training in New York. A large portion of this money comes from the EPA for Brownfields job training. $2 million comes from the bipartisan infrastructure law. The hope is to ensure a strong environmental benefit while providing more economic opportunities to underserved areas. Lisa Garcia with the EPA says people can learn job skills while participating.
The job training program allows a variety of certifications where they learn valuable and really high-level skill sets, which include lead and asbestos abatement, hazardous waste operations and emergency response, mold remediation, like I said, environmental sampling and analysis.
This year's funding was higher thanks to a five-year commitment from the bipartisan infrastructure law. Garcia is hopeful the Brownfield job training program will receive the same amounts of money when it comes up for renewal. Though Garcia says the program is one of the most successful, it's not without its challenges. One such challenge is outreach and public awareness, since these aren't commonly known career pathways. But she's optimistic for the program's future goals, which include putting her out of work.
My passion is working to advance environmental justice, and so the goal is to get rid of my job. Because we have cleaned up all the blighted and dilapidated, contaminated sites.
She adds there's equity in a healthy environment. But Garcia knows this will take some time. Instead, she hopes Congress will continue to invest in programs like this one to ensure brownfields become a thing of the past. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Climate change, Christmas, and capitalism. The Great Southwest Airlines Meltdown. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Climate change, Christmas, and capitalism chaotically converged with an epic operational failure at Southwest Airlines that stranded thousands of holiday travelers and airline staff at airports for days. Winter Storm Elliott slammed the continental United States with snow, pelting winds, and freezing cold Arctic air in what meteorologists call a bomb cyclone. Air travel was understandably impacted, but the scale of the disruption at Southwest was many times greater than other airlines, accounting for an estimated 90% of the tens of thousands of canceled flights. Central to this travel catastrophe are the deregulation of the airline industry during the late 1970s during the Carter administration and the decision by Southwest executives to prioritize their investors over customers and staff.
It is unconscionable to me that we are standing here today in 2022 when we have been sounding the alarm along with our pilots union and other unions on property that our technology issues are absolutely going to lead us to this place. We have seen this before. This is not the first time. It is the first time it's happened over a Christmas that's affected so many.
That's Corliss King, Vice President of Transport Workers Union, TWU Local 556, representing Southwest Airlines flight attendants, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. Her union has been in contract negotiations with Southwest for 4 years. Among the workers' demands is that the airline fix the technology failures that disproportionately impact frontline aviation workers and passengers. Southwest uses software called SkySolver, released in the early 2000s, to correct scheduling interruptions by moving planes and staff around the country as fast and efficiently as possible. The storm overwhelmed Southwest's dated system, as Corliss King explained.
crew scheduling, which is our heartbeat of our operation for our crews, is using technology that is not expandable to the airline we are right now. There are not enough seats and not enough expansion of those technology tools to be able to say, on a normal day, we have 500 people who are out of place. But due to a crisis, we now have 1,000 people, 1,500 people out of place. That technology has to be able to expand to meet an unprecedented situation like this. That is not able to happen.
Consequently, thousands of Southwest flight attendants and pilots were stranded, often with no place to stay other than in an airport's crew lounge. Southwest had no way to match available crews with idle planes, lacking basic information about where their workers were. Meanwhile, ground crews were forced to work longer hours in the freezing cold, some suffering frostbite. Tens of thousands of passengers have spent days stranded in airports, often separated from their luggage, some without medicines. Southwest told most passengers they wouldn't be getting an alternate flight for several days at the earliest, claiming the airline lacked capacity.
They have no capacity because it's actually more profitable to have bad service than good service.
Paul Hudson is president of Flyers Rights, an airline passenger rights organization, speaking on Democracy Now!
Every airline is required to have a plan to deal with bad weather and other disruptions. But there's no enforcement of the plan. There are no reserve requirements. There are no customer service standards of any meaningful nature. The whole idea of deregulation was that the airlines would compete to provide better service. But actually what happens today, they compete to provide more profitable but worse service.
For passengers experiencing multi-day flight delays, Paul Hudson warns.
Well, domestically, you have no rights to delay compensation. And if a weather is the reason for the cancellation or delay, you don't really have any rights to things like hotel accommodations. It's all up to the airlines. And, of course, they'll do anything to avoid those expenses.
While Southwest has underinvested in its IT infrastructure and reserve capacity, it's treated its investors well. In the 3 years leading up to the pandemic, Southwest reportedly spent $5.6 billion on stock buybacks. And just weeks before the Christmas debacle, announced it would be the first U.S. airline since the pandemic began to provide a stock dividend. U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg tweeted on Wednesday, Southwest Airlines needs to do everything it takes to get stranded passengers to their destinations and cover their expenses like meals, hotel, ground transport in the meantime. We'll continue to hold them accountable, he tweeted. This compensation is the least Southwest should do. However, according to the Transportation Department's own website, there are no federal laws requiring airlines to provide passengers with money or other compensation when their flights are delayed. Meanwhile, the climate emergency worsens. Air travel is estimated to produce 4% of the global greenhouse gas emissions annually. After a dramatic pandemic-related drop in 2020, air travel has recovered and is increasing. Unless we make drastic changes to how we live, including how we travel, we will all be stranded, not at airports, but on this, our only rapidly heating planet. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. An unprecedented number of businesses launched during the pandemic, more than any time in the previous 15 years, according to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And 65% of all new jobs come from smaller ones.
Small business is really the engine of economic growth, not just for rural communities, but for anywhere.
But John Mazzina with the Center for Economic Accountability says rural businesses, more than urban ones, struggle to find workers. There are fewer people, and lack of good internet access doesn't help.
There are still plenty of places in rural areas where broadband is a real challenge, if not completely unavailable.
And too often, skills don't match the new jobs. Many people have to work 2, 3, or 4 jobs, although rural entrepreneurs report a shortage of qualified candidates, according to Mazina.
I say that rural folks figured out what we now call like the gig economy long before anyone else did. I mean, anybody who spent any time in rural America knows that that's just sort of the way things work.
At the same time, thousands of seasonal and migrant ag workers enter the U.S. each year. While federal immigration reform is in limbo, one labor union says the need to protect guest workers from wage exploitation and poor working conditions continues. The Farm Labor Organizing Committee represents agricultural workers in Ohio, North Carolina, and Virginia. Here's Union President Baltimore Velasquez.
We want to make sure we partner with other unions who have an interest in this because it's going to help raise the boat for everybody.
Velasquez says the union's priority is forming an alliance between small family farmers and workers.
So that we can create a sustainable pricing system to maintain those small family farms so that we can preserve our jobs.
Some farmers fear the USDA's proposed new safety rules for poultry farmers to prevent salmonella poisoning unfairly burden small producers and risk further monopolizing the industry. The CDC estimates salmonella bacteria cause 420 deaths in the U.S. every year.
It's well-intentioned, I think, but the result of this is going to be catastrophic to the small American poultry farmer.
Christine Kilfoyle Baffo with Walden Local Meat in Massachusetts says these providers won't have the required testing and control tools available to chicken industry giants. Smaller farms and producers were the backbone of the country's food supply at the start of the COVID pandemic. Charles Ryan Wilson owns Commonwealth Poultry in Maine. He says the new regulatory framework is a slap in the face to family farmers who rose to the occasion.
We were able to provide people with food that never would have reached out to us because the supermarkets didn't have chicken on the shelf.
Still snowed in? The Farmer's Almanac predicts more to come if you live in the Rockies and possibly as far south as Texas and Oklahoma. For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the New Year's weekend. Well, on Saturday, rain is likely, mainly after 1 p.m. It will be cloudy with a temperature high near 50 degrees. There will be rain on New Year's Eve night. That will come mainly before 1 a.m. The temperature low will be at around 42 degrees. And on Sunday, New Year's Day, a chance of showers before 7 a.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 48 degrees. And Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 32 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to Transmission Art and Experimental Sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
This is the Eli Escobar remix of the Us Girls, or US Girls, however you want to say it, recent pop smash, So Typically Now.
Dead and Kingston's booming. That's a real nice snake. Can I make it stop zooming? You moved upstate, so typically now I'll send you an image if you would just calm down. So typically now, I sent you an image. You sent me a thumb down. Triggers with them, say run the show. So you sold off your condo. You're shutting it down, you're drunking it out. You always get what you want though. You're under duress, I'm freaking out. Yeah, I'm changing my passwords.
integrity. ancestress has left all manners. Her pulsating skin repelling the doctors she despised. Placed a pacemaker
from the 2022 album Fossera. This is Ancestress from Bjork and Sindre Eldin.
Nature wrote the psalm. It expands things.
Horse Lords there with Zero Degree Machine from their 2022 album Comradely Objects on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Creative Community Radio.